moths try to touch it. Little Caesars to go cut. Sunwash plastic, garbage bin blue now from the cornflower sun. Handles like Madonna snails, picking zits in Home Depot and the tread in shoes. You're a fast tripper, petition on a rusted lamp, soft chorus of cellos, blocks out trucks with blackout windows, rabbits looking.
Welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba.
Our guests this evening, Tommy and Morten, conceptual artists in A. Kassen, the Copenhagen Art Collective, working in Copenhagen and Berlin, with site-specific sculptures, performative installations, and photography. Both have graduated from the Royal Danish Academy of Fine Arts in Copenhagen, and it was during this time the collective A. Kassen came together with Tommy Morten, Kristen Breton Mayer, and Soren Peterson. A. Kassen has exhibited nationally and internationally in solo and group exhibitions in such countries as Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Iceland, the U.S., Mexico, Spain, and Germany, to name a few. They have participated in such events as Arco Madrid through the representative galleries, in the 2009 Momentum Nordic Biennale for Contemporary Art, and they have been recognized for their work with their third prize from the Carnegie Art Award. Their works may be found in such collections as the Malmö Kunstmuseum in Sweden, the Centro de Arte Dos de Mayo in Spain, the Brands Museum in Denmark, and the Kistefos Museum in Jevnikar, Norway. A. Kassen has also published books about their work, such as Dimensions Variable. Welcome to Art World Invasion. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having us.
I thought we might start with taking a look at Riverman, which is a brilliant three-piece sculpture specifically designed and installed on the site at the Kistefos Museum, the sculpture park in a quaint Norwegian town near Oslo. Can you describe the sculptures and the fascinating process behind their creation?
It's a series of works that we've been doing over a longer period, but this one is especially made for the sculpture park in Norway, and it's in a way site-specific sculpture, you could say. We use a technique which is taken from actually an old New Year's tradition where you pour lead or tin into water, and from there you see the shapes that the metal is forming when it's cooled down underneath the water. And we did this in the river that runs through the sculpture park. Three different places in the river, we poured this liquid bronze in, and drops form solid bronzes. And it becomes tiny models, which we get 3D scanned and digitally enlarged, and then shaped again in bronze in a larger scale. And we've been doing these in different scales. These are some of the bigger ones, which are 2 or 3 meters long or wide or high. So that's the process.
Tell us a little bit more about some of the other artwork pieces that you've done with it.
It's an amazing process because many sculptures during history has tried to refine this perfect shapes that nature also has. First, when we came up with this concept, we actually thought that we could take 1 ton of bronze and pour it in the river. And the bronze caster, he just loved this kind of anarchistic way around it, because to produce a bronze sculpture is quite a long process, making all the molds and stuff like that. So he liked the idea and he thought it was possible. But when it came time that we should test it, it just wasn't possible to keep the liquid bronze together because of this, that the bronze is approximately 1100 degrees Fahrenheit warm. So it's very hot. And when it hits the water that is maybe 10 degrees, then it just goes like popcorn. It goes apart. So we realized that we had to change the concept in this way, that at site we make the models and then we choose which one we find interesting due to its shape. And then we take that piece, as Tommy told, and then 3D scan it and then either print it in large or CNC carve it in a larger scale, and then give it back to the bronze caster, who then makes a model of it and then cast it.
It looks like you use that process for a lot of different pieces, from the sculptures to the paintings. Do you find that you are still experimenting to do other types of things with it?
You can say that the bronze painting is a bit the same here. The bronze is also set free, but it's not poured into water. It's just poured into an open sand mold. And then we hang it in the way that the bronze finds its way, so it becomes landscapes in a way.
Just to comment on this also, I think what we do and what many artists do are working in a line of a topic, or you find something that you're interested in, and then you search out different possibilities in this material or in this object. If you see kind of an overview of what we've been doing, then some objects, some materials are used in multiple works, but in different ways and with slightly different angles. Just looking into the options and the opportunities that maybe you didn't do it best the first time, or maybe you didn't explore this angle to it. It's of course a common thing, but sometimes it's when you have this liquid bronze in your hands, then okay, we should try out this version also.
Just going back to the beginnings, what was your background and training like in art? And how did you come together as a collaborative art team?
We all met at the Art Academy in Copenhagen and studied the same year, but more or less in different mediums. I was mainly painting and Morten was mainly making sculptures, Christian photos, and Søren also sculptures. So we came from different departments, different mediums, but met in a quite random way. But what is general for all of us is that I think we have an openness to both the world in all senses, but also to exploring new perspectives in where we come from. So I think, yes, this just a general openness.
Like Tommy said, it was accidental that we met each other at the academy, and there were medicine companies that wanted a decoration. And then we spent a week or 2 weeks together trying to come up with some ideas for this medical company. And then they ended up not accepting our offer, but we made them a bill. So we charged them still for making the sketches. We also found out that you can manage a lot when you are four. In the early days, we sometimes could have two or three openings in a weekend and participate in different group shows around town and stuff like that. And it was just because we were four, we had the energy and the willingness to experiment and maybe not so afraid of failure either. So it became really a free space. And then at a certain point, we just somehow succeeded and people were asking us to take part of shows. And then it became more and more serious as the years went by.
Do you remember your first show together?
It was an open call in Copenhagen.
And when did you come up with the name for your collective? And can you tell us a little about what it means?
It has also been one of the first shows we had to be in. They ask for a name, and then we should have to figure out a name. For if you ask me, you will hear three different stories or variation of why we are called Akassen. If you ask Tommy, you'll get three other stories why we are called Akassen. There are several ways into it somehow. At that time, we had a lot of fun of companies calling themselves ABC Design, A for window cleaning, A something or another, to be first in the phone book. now the phone book is not around anymore. But the A with a space in between makes you come first on invitation, and you still come first in the index of books and on the flyers normally. So in a way, we use the name for this kind of purpose of getting quite childish, but be the first on the poster somehow. So that was one way into it. And another one was, for me at least, that in Denmark, maybe the one of the best known artistic groups are Superflex, which also comes from Copenhagen. And they quite early on also decided that they wanted to have a real strong brand. So they should find a real cool name. So Superflex, it cannot be much more powerful than that. And they even found a color, this orange color, that their brand should always be with this name and this color, and very corporate-like, because in a way our name is a bit counter that. A-kassen actually means more or less social unemployment benefits in Danish, which is, if you meet some of your old high school friends and you say you work with A-kassen, they will kind of feel sad for you because they think it's because it's not gone you that well. But of course, we are not that sad about the idea that we are working in A-kassen, if you understand what I mean. But it's just the name. And one of the things we are most happy about is actually this small game and play that it gets first in the index of books and on flyers. And somehow we still find it funny when we are on a book cover and they name all the artist name, and we'll just beat Al Weiwei and be second, and he will be second in after us, even though he's much larger. But a small little game.
But also, when you're out of Denmark, then nobody knows really what it stands for, and it looks like a name. And the last name, Kassen. Sometimes we get spam saying, "Dear Mr. Kassen." Also this, because we, many of our works, what we didn't maybe talk about here, but is that we quite like to work with reality and try to push reality or to twist it so you get a new perspective on everyday objects. And this, a word or a name, it's also an object. And putting a new meaning into this name with a bad reputation, putting in some poetry. If you read in the beginning, if we got a review and it said A-kassen is making an exhibition here or there, then it sounds like complete nonsense in Danish, because it's A-kassen. It's not what you normally would think of in art production. I'm not sure we were that aware of it when we came up with the name, but that's also, in a way, how you, with a lot of our works, that you learn about the works later on, what it actually means or what it's potentially got going. So this, that hopefully also this we are for, that we can talk about that also, but that you're not able to be in everybody's minds. You have your own mind, and everybody is having their perspective on things. So you learn new things when working together, and also from your old works, or from this name that came quite quickly after we started working, very intuitively. And in a way, it fits quite well, I think.
Can you tell us about an exhibition that you have on now and describe some of the pieces?
We have a show in Madrid right now, and it's called Farola, which in Spanish means lamppost. And when you enter the gallery room on the ground level floor, you will meet something that could look like a meteor on a pole, like a weird rock on a pole. And then when you investigate the gallery room, you will find it's possible to go downstairs to the cellar. And when you are down in the cellar, you realize it's a lamppost hanging upside down. So we drilled a hole in the main gallery floor and installed this lamppost. But in the main gallery room, you would see what you never see when you're looking at a lamppost, what's underneath the earth. So it's actually just this metal and organic shape of concrete that is holding the lamppost in order to not fall when it's windy and stuff like that. So it's a ready-made vegetable that we have taken out of the soil and put upside down in the gallery room, also to light up the cellar room, the basement room.
Some of your other works are site-specific and outdoors and larger scale. Is there one that you'd like to tell us about?
It's kind of funny. We finished the academy in 2007, so we've been working together for quite some years. And both also what is possible being four that you actually are able to spend both. So we've been doing both institutional shows and gallery shows, but more and more also public works, as you say. And this working site specific is an obvious thing for us, because when we are four, it's very, in a way, important to react on the same site or the same situation. Actually, a piece I'm happy to talk about these days, it's a work that we're doing in some years' time, but it's a proposal that we've done and it's accepted. So now we work on it. It's for an ambulance hall in Sweden. And here the open call was to make a sculpture on top of this one-story ambulance hall. The architecture isn't very appealing. It looks like what it is. It's only functional and clear. It's an ambulance hall. It's where the ambulances go in and out, and there's no finesse to it whatsoever. And on top of this one-story ambulance hall, there's a smaller piece is aluminium box for ventilation. And while we were looking at this and trying to come up with an idea, we saw that the scale of this ventilation box on top were more or less the same scale, just smaller as the ambulance hall. What our suggestion was to copy the whole ambulance hall in a one-third size and then copying it again in a smaller size on top of that again. So it's kind of a babushka ambulance hall where it gets smaller and smaller on top. And of course, the two miniature ambulance halls, which are on top of the existing real one, they're not going to be working, of course. For miniature people, it would have been nice, though. I'm very pleased with a project like that and that they accepted it because, first of all, the ambulance hall, as I said, was rather sad situation. And also, the whole function is a tough situation. People are going in there injured or ill, so it's a serious thing. And this that they actually accepted this proposal, in a way, you could see a joke, but also a mind trick. I think it's going to be very weird and very hard to understand what is happening, actually. It would look like a mistake or a glitch in the matrix. Also, it's not for everybody. It will immediately look like art. And that also is a point that we quite often try to play with, to lure people in. Some people have this reaction when they see art in a public situation. They will immediately look at it and see, okay, this is art. Okay, I don't have to deal with this anymore then, because I can just see it's a sculpture or whatever. But I think we are interested in placing ourselves in this gap where you can be doubting what it is and questioning the function of it or what's happened. And that may be making you take a step or two closer and inspecting it. I think that's both a strategy, which is a bit annoying word, but on the other hand, I think that actually triggers something.
The Muzak exhibition, Window to the World. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that idea came to be?
It was such a nice invitation. We got this beautiful invitation to Muzak in Lyon in Spain, where they have this beautiful architectural museum, or it's really magnificent from the outside. And we were invited to their more experimental showcase, not a big exhibition, but a room in the museum. And we fell in love with the architecture and thought, how can we make that architecture to become our work? And in Denmark at that time, we had had a lot of riots. There were a youth house that the state wanted to close down. So once in a while, there were these riots in the streets of Copenhagen. And of course, McDonald's and other stores, they had to board up their windows when they knew, okay, it's Friday night and people are angry and they're marching down the street. They know windows will be broken. So we took this image of these riots to the show. So we convinced the museum of taking out six window panels of the museum and putting these wooden panels in instead, plywood boards. And actually, immediately when these plywood boards were in the facade, people were coming from the street asking in the front desk, what has happened? Because The museum is the pride and joy of the town, and it's really the most beautiful building in the town. So people were very pleased about it. So it looked like someone has been throwing rocks at it, or something has gone wrong, or the economic of the building was not that good anymore, so they couldn't afford to replace the windows. So in a way, it generated immediate stories that there were these wooden panels on this beautiful museum. And then if you entered the museum and went to our show, you could see that we had just used or borrowed the materials from the panels to make this sliding door sculpture. So we made this more or less looking like a snowflake of three sets of sliding doors. And when you stand 2 meters away from it, it was open. But if you came closer to it, it closed its doors. So it was like a interactive, but also reacting on your movement. And it was very nice that the museum was so open for this idea. We were very afraid that they, in the beginning, would just, when we came up with the idea, say, hey, it's not possible. No one are allowed to touch our facade because it's won Mies van der Rohe prize, this building. It's very, very important. So we knew that we should not take this meeting on a Skype. So Tommy and Christian from the group flew down to Spain to convince them that they accept our proposal of changing the architecture for these 3 months or half a year, however, I can't recall how long the show was. But it was so nice that they were up for producing this sculpture and all these stories together with us. And we have actually tried this quite a lot. We try to push the limit of what's possible in many shows. So we often have these quite long dialogues with institutions or galleries of what's possible and not possible. And there it's really also helpful to be for people because somehow you can be more convincing and there are more people that can support each other and still believing it's important and it's really necessary. It's important that it's those windows. It's not just some other windows. It has to be those windows exactly. And then we keep on pushing or coming up with solutions. And often we find a common ground where we can find each other. We have tried several times where people have taken the thumb and pointing it downwards and just telling us it's impossible. It will not going to happen. And then 2 months later or half a year later, we have found a solution and can make some of these works that at first sight can look fairly impossible to realize. But we have the strength of being for and then being able to find some solution. It's really one of the things that I enjoy being a group, that we are able to push some of these limits around. Also, just coming up with an idea like Tommy told you about this Babushka ambulance hall. It's a very, very strange idea. But when we first made the sketch, it was just by far the most funny concept we could come up with for that place. Often it is that we come up with site-specific ideas, and we really think that it's only in that given moment that it really, really makes sense because we have seen something in the architecture, in the rooms that has it inspired us. So we go all in to realize it in especially that particular space. After being a group, maybe 4 or 5 years, we realized we were all the youngest in our families. So we are all younger brothers. So that might also be a binding clue in the group that we have been brought up as the annoying younger brother that is not taking no for an answer.
You've also published some books about your work, such as Dimensions Variable. Would you like to tell us a little more about this one and any others that you're working on?
Actually, at the moment, I'm trying to see if I can convince myself that there were some constructive about COVID. But one of the things for us was that we had not made a book for quite a long time prior to this Dimension Variable. But we started when COVID came around to fundraise for this book because we had the time. There were a couple of shows that were canceled and we had some time. And then we started making applications to get funds for making a new book. So in a way, we can thank COVID for giving us the time to find the pictures. Dimensions Variable is a bit of a survey book that it is works from 18 years back till now. It's not at all what we have done, but it's some of the more important works that we have done in our mind. And also when we work so site-specific as we do, a lot of our work is dismantled after a show. So if we made Pigeon's Portal in a church, an old work where we make leaded windows in an exhibition hall in a former church. And then we combine two windows of the church so the doves could fly through the church. No one did, unfortunately, but they had the possibility of taking a shortcut. Instead of flying over the church, they could fly through the church. A work like that were only shown in that exhibition place maybe 2 months and then taken apart. And it was a huge work. We learned to make leaded windows and we made the iron construction. And that goes so much into making some of these works. And can, when you look upon it, it looks fairly light, but you can also see there is a lot of construction to it. But somehow those works disappear if they are not existing in photos. Of course, there will be people telling the stories and you might on the internet find a photo. But in a way for us, it's been really nice to get it published and get it on print. And then, you know, it will never disappear completely somehow.
How does somebody get a copy?
It is by Moose Publishing. So you can buy it on their homepage, an Italian publisher.
Are there any other new techniques or series that you've been working on that you'd like to tell us about?
We're working on another book that is coming next year. During COVID, me and Tommy were often at the studio and Christian is working from Berlin and Søren were maybe at home or something. And we had a lot of time. So we decided that we wanted to make a meeting every week. So we started meeting because in everyday life, when things are going well, you are a bit too busy to catch up with old friends and stuff like that. So one of the meetings we had during COVID was with the publisher of Architectural Press in Denmark. So we are working on a book for the architectural publishing company where it focuses on site-specific works of ours that has been placed in architecture or in gallery rooms. We had a meeting today with them, and it's also super exciting for us to work on this project because there we are trying to make the book into a piece of architecture or make the book into a piece of work in that sense. So the concept of this book is going to be that it's a permanent open book. So it will not be folded as a regular book. It will be folded as if you were on page 30. So when you flip a book around and press it hard, that is how it will be presented. So we will make it as a permanently open book. So it will come more as a sculpture when you get it in your hands and see it looks like something has gone completely wrong in the printer's office, that the front page will not be on where the front page normally is. There will be this distortion in the layout of this book, maybe to understand a bit.
Do you have any advice for artists who are starting out and thinking about working as a collective?
Do it.
Yeah. I was also thinking this, being an artist potentially is such a lonely life as a solo artist. I'm not envying my solo artist colleagues now being in a group. It has, of course, its ups and downs, but actually being able to be in a group and have the dialogue, meeting up with people. We're also quite fortunate that we are four that actually can go in this big marriage together and be able to understand each other and give each other some space. But yeah, very much just do it. And then the important things are to be open, get inspired by others. Personal story is that my three colleagues, they all got their family and children fairly fast. I was the slow one in that department. I could see how much that also influenced me afterwards, this being able to work in a marriage as well as in a group. Of course, many artists become artists because they have something ego-orientated going for them, self-centered. And for me, that was kind of an eye-opener to see, okay, this that you maybe thought was a strength is something that actually can be very much a boundary for opening up your mind and see other people's perspective. So get a husband or get a wife and get in a group.
We sometimes say it's good to be in a group when it's going bad, because then you can help each other through the bad times and maybe encourage to apply or do something productive about it so you're not alone in this dark hole of hopelessness. But it's also more fun when it goes well. that you are for people that you can have the good experience with. Because sometimes when you're a solo artist and it goes well, your fellow colleagues are not as happy as you are about it, and you can tell it to your friends, then your colleague artist, how you feel about something at a certain point, because it is a bit of a tough world, the art world. But we have been lucky enough to somehow be able to stick together. And sometimes people also try to connect it to the Scandinavian school system a bit, that we are able to work in this group, because we are also brought up with in the school system of working a lot together. From early on, we get in groups at the school to work on different projects and make different assignments. So we might also be, as a country, more open for this kind of collective thinking. For us, it's been working well. We once made some studio visits in the Netherlands, and there came this female collective where they were 8 artists working together. And they were, how can you agree on anything? And of course, they were 8, so they had their issues. But they had just started working together, and they could just feel the huge energy that were in these 8 people making performances and stuff like that. But of course, there's also the downside that you really have to negotiate. You have a lot of talk before you realize a project when you are so many people together. And that's also one of the things in our group. We, of course, have to talk a lot before we realize something, because we all have to be on the same page before we realize something. And that can definitely also be a tough part when you just want to be intuitive and do something. But still, you have to find a common ground or give each other this type of space so you can experiment and do what you feel like still.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for sharing your story and valuable insight with our audience. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and we wish you continued success.
Thanks a lot for the invitation.
It was very nice talking to you.
I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.
Sukrum's Brewing Company and UMFM 101.5 present Sunday Sessional, a monthly pairing of UMFM program hosts and musical guests in the intimate environs of Sukrum's Tap Room. Spend a Sunday afternoon enjoying song selections from one of your favorite radio hosts and stripped-down performances from some of the city's best artists while enjoying a tasty beverage or two. This free event happens monthly at Sukrum's Tap Room, located at 479B Warsaw Avenue. But like a rotating tap, each one is unique with a new host and slate of performers. For more information on Sunday sessional dates and details, visit the event calendar at umfm.com and come join us at Sukrum's.
Our regular host couldn't be here, so here's a rebroadcast of one of their classic episodes for your listening enjoyment. Please note, you might hear some discussions and announcements that are slightly out of date. Thanks so much for listening to UMFM 101.5.
Love is a road and I'm going down. Love is a road and I'm going down. Yeah, I hope you'll be there. Millions or more out among the crowd. How will I find you now? I hope you'll be there. Yeah, I hope you'll be there.